Welcome to Podcast Rebellion. I'm your host, Juco All-American, joined by Whiskey Wednesday. We have a lot of cool stuff to talk about now that the Grove Bowl is over. I watched it while it was happening, not live in person, but on television. Whiskey did not watch it while it was happening because he was in Spain.
Portugal.
Oh, Portugal. That's right. And so, yeah, I know that you've gotten a chance to watch it since then, and we have a lot to talk about and interesting things to discuss. So let's just get started. Of course, the first thing to talk about is the quarterbacks. I'll actually just let you speak for a minute on kind of what your thoughts were, and then I'll talk for a while about them as well.
Absolutely. There are a lot of things to find encouraging about the quarterback play. Altmyer and Dart both have some running ability that they showed during the game. When I initially read the stats, I was really shocked by Altmyer's running stats compared to Dart's. But then watching the game, there seemed to be some differential in how the whistles affected their running stats. There were several times where, like, nobody is about to take down Jackson Dart, but it was blown dead. And several times where, at least one time, where someone literally touched Altmyer and they just let him run it in.
Right.
That cleared up that confusion on my part. Dart definitely had two pretty bad interceptions. But watching the game, he really needed a little bit more receiver help. And he clearly has the better downfield arm. And he did make some really electric throws too. So I think there's a lot to be encouraged by with Dart's play, even if there are some wrinkles to iron out. I think it is still fair to say Altmyer has a slight lead at this point, but I would still be surprised if that lead holds. How do you feel?
Yeah, I think that it can't really be stressed. So first of all, I think that overall quarterback play was pretty bad in the game. Like Altmyer was 9 of 22 and Dart was 11 for 30. So like those are horrendous completion percentages.
Yes.
Of course, completion percentage is not everything, but like that's not a good starting point. But it's a spring game. Receivers are kind of like intermixing and, you know, they don't have timing and all that sort of stuff. And then on top of that, Jackson Dart's entire offensive line was the second string and he was running for his life. We'll talk about the second string offensive line and we'll talk about some of the defensive linemen as well in kind of what they did. But yeah, he was running for his life and that's a tough situation to be placed in. I think that the biggest difference between these two, and other people have drawn this parallel or this conclusion as well, but is that Altmyer checked down when he needed to, and Dart didn't. Dart was going for the home run ball on nearly every throw. And, you know, sometimes that worked, but like you said, it also led to two pretty ugly picks. Both struggled with downfield accuracy, but I think that, and this is something that Lane Kiffin actually alluded to at halftime and when they were asking him some questions, is it seemed like Jackson Dart was trying to win the starting job on every throw instead of just saying like, hey, let's operate the offense the way that it's supposed to work. And when there's not something down the field, I'm just going to throw it to, you know, a back in the flat or something like that and make it work in that way. And it didn't work out for him. And Luke Altmyer instead, on the other hand, kind of did. He would take what was given to him for the most part. I mean, still 9 of 22. Can't echo that enough. But, you know, he didn't throw the ball away. He didn't throw the ball to the opposing team, even though he had some trouble in accuracy. And then Kincaid Dent, who I still kind of count out of the race, but he was overall, while playing for both teams, he was 12 of 13 on the day, and he had 140 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 picks. So, you know, a lot of that was in the second half against walk-ons and things like that, but, like, that's pretty interesting that he would, you know, be as efficient as he was if maybe not like, you know, at the end of the day in a game, maybe you're not like thrilled with him or his production in that way, but it's like, he didn't like mess things up, which is a pretty awesome situation considering that he's relatively clearly the third string quarterback. And so if you get to that point and you have somebody who's just going to kind of like let the rest of the team win, that's fine. That's a fine situation to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's my overall thought. I agree with you that Altmaier probably leads the race, but the same way you do, I think that it's difficult to imagine that will maintain, because Dart has only been in the offense for a while. Altmaier has been in it for over a year. And so he's had longer to get familiar with what the coaches expect him to do when a play's not there. Whereas Dart is still learning and has come in and trying to kind of make a big impression. Whereas hopefully the coaches will be able to rein him in and say, hey, we know you have more potential on your downfield throws, but you gotta, you know, focus a little bit more on taking what's available at times. Absolutely. As for running, I think you're right. Like both of them, I think are pretty good runners. And as far as like the overall statistics at the end of the day, yeah, nobody could hit them. So of course they're going to run pretty well.
Yeah. Dent, circling back to him, I think one thing he did particularly well, obviously he made most of his production throwing to running backs, but I thought he did that really well. Like he put them in good situations to catch the ball easily and run, which isn't easy to do. And that's not the worst skill for your third string quarterback to have, especially when you have a good running back stable, which I'm sure we will get into shortly.
Yeah. Look at you transitioning. Next on the list is running backs. Look at that. But you made the mistake of not actually transitioning. You said, we'll get into that shortly. You could have said, like, which brings us. yeah, so I think the running backs, it's tough because the top four running backs of Zach Evans, Quinshon Judkins, Kentrell Bullock, and Ulysses Bentley the fourth, in whatever order you want to take, other than Zach Evans is first, barely ran the ball. And when asked about that, Kiffin actually said, like, yeah, it's not exciting. We wanted to make it exciting. And also, like, it's kind of a little more dangerous. And the last thing you want is to come out of the spring with an injury. So, yeah, I think that when we did see them run, they did fine. None of them really had enough carries to do, like, amazing things that, you know, were jaw-dropping or anything.
Yeah, and they let a lot of running backs get multiple carries too. They really cleared the bench in the running back room. That had me glancing at the roster quite a lot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But to your point, they did do some interesting stuff in receiving. Like there was, I mean, one of the bright spots of the red team in the first quarter was a 42-yard touchdown pass from Altmaier to Bentley, which was basically like a 7-yard pass that Bentley then shook a bunch of players and crossed over the field. Traversed, is that right? Traversed to the other side of the field and was able to take it to the house because of his shiftiness and speed. And, you know, we saw in his highlights when he was at SMU that he was a shifty player and fast relative to that competition. But I think that for me, that one play, and obviously like it's small sample size, all that stuff, but made me think a little bit more, or made me feel a little bit better about his transition to the SEC. Because while the blue team that he was facing was not entirely made up of Ole Miss starters or anything like that, it was still like relatively SEC caliber athletes. And I think that you and I both feel like the defense, especially in the secondary, is relatively deep. And so, you know, being able to see him get that done against those players is encouraging.
Absolutely. It was an electric play. And he had a couple other really good looking runs too. Actually, if I remember correctly, I think he didn't quite get the touchdown on that play, but then ran it in.
Right. You're right. Yep.
Yeah. 'Cause that was Altmaier, and Altmaier was not credited with a touchdown. So But yeah, he immediately after making this like electric long run all the way across the field, he takes, I think maybe the next handoff, and just kind of jogs it into the end zone. Again,
yeah, that's right. He ran left on the next play. That's right. Do you have any other takeaways for the running backs? I mean, I just don't think that we saw enough of any of them to really make any judgments.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously really didn't want Zach Evans to get hurt. That would have been just one of the dumbest things that could have happened. But, I mean, Kentrell Bullock looked, you know, quick and serviceable at times. I think we also didn't get a great look at him. Isaiah Woolard had a crazy run.
No, how about that? You and I both have, like, always kind of loved that guy. Not that, like, we think that he should have been necessarily stealing carries from Ely or Connor last year or anything like that, but as a true freshman, he was like second string and rushed for like 600 yards or something, and then just like disappeared once Connor and Ely were on the team. But he stuck around and he had 78 yards on four carries in the Grove Bowl. And to your point, like one of those was a really long run down the left sideline. Now he's not like, I mean, I think that a faster running back is able to take that to the house, and that's not him. But he was able to shake some tackles, and he even like stiff-armed a guy on his way to making that happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of stiff arms, Quinshon Judkins stiff-armed a dude into the next county on a run. He also looks insane. So for a freshman. For someone who, you know, could still be in high school in theory, he just looks incredibly well built and it'll be really hard to keep him off the field.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously we both think Zach Evans is the clear cut starter. But it's interesting that they now with Ulysses Bentley having transferred in, like, where are the carries going to go beyond Zach Evans? Quinshon Judkins, Ulysses Bentley, and Kentrell Bullock are all competing. And I think that, like, there was a time where it seemed like we might end up with a running back room that was Zach Evans, Kentrell Bullock, and then, like, maybe not even Quinshon Judkins, because at the time, like, Kevin Smith? No, that's not right.
I think that is right.
Is it right? Yeah, Kevin Smith had, you know, just left for Miami, and Quinshon Judkins was kind of like his guy, his high school signee. Mm-hmm. So thought maybe he would transfer or follow him, and then we'd be left with like Zach Evans, Kentrell Bullock, and then whoever we could sign in the late signing period or something. And that was actually not like at least in my opinion, that was not even like a terrible outcome. And so for Kentrell Bullock now to be like, I guess scrounging for carries in the same way that Ulysses Bentley and Quinshon Judkins are, is a really like unexpected, in my opinion, kind of state of the running back room, considering everything that happened over the offseason.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good room, it looks like.
Yeah. Let's talk about receivers. Again, because of some of the passing offenses, woes, and because there's so many people who played, receiving was kind of like come and go. But certainly J.J. Henry, who is smaller, but he led the red team and was Luke Altmyer's favorite target on the day with 5 catches and 84 yards. He's kind of a maybe like a shiftier player. He's listed at 5'9", 170, but, you know, a receiver is kind of, especially in a Lane Kiffin offense, is a position where you can be that size and still kind of make things happen and make it work. I think that he also, like, battled for some balls in ways that I wouldn't necessarily have expected someone of his size to be able to do.
Yeah, Henry made a couple of big plays, and overall, it's a room. I know you said a lot of guys played. It's hard to judge. It's a room that needs some help. And I think he gives us some potential at least.
Yeah. And also there are several injuries there. So certainly Jonathan Mingo, Jalen Knox, and I am assuming Rafe Vincent is actually injured because he didn't, to the best of my knowledge, he didn't play in the game. And I've actually heard that he is sort of a pleasant surprise as a walk-on and someone they expect to be playing a decent amount in the season. Not technically a receiver, but Michael Trigg, he did not have a bad game. 7 catches for 89 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then on top of that, he caught a 2-point conversion. So he was team blue. So Dart had him to throw to where Altmaier did not. And that worked out pretty well because he appears to be like a tight end, the likes of which Ole Miss hasn't had since Evan Engram. He is a potential like major difference maker for the team.
To me, he looks like easily one of the top 5 players on the entire team. If you haven't seen the game, go watch it just for that. He's just like, his arm length is insane. His like hand size is insane. He catches balls in ways that it's like he's taunting defenders, basically. I don't know another way to describe it. There are a couple of situations where Dart clearly knew that he was going to throw to Trigg, and he didn't initially appear to be open, and he either just put it out to space or just threw it at in the general direction of his hands, and he just makes the catch anyway. pretty electric player.
Yeah, he's 6'4", 245, and super agile. Also, like, very legitimately fast, not just kind of a shifty guy who doesn't have speed. And then on top of that, I think that he's really great at using his body to position himself to win, you know, balls that are up for grabs. At USC, as a freshman, he caught 7 balls for 109 yards and 1 touchdown. He played in, I think, 6 games. He only recorded catches in 4. Mm-hmm. What on earth was that coaching staff doing?
I don't know. He may have been injured at some point, if I recall, which probably didn't help his cause, but still, like, he didn't get this much better.
No, I mean, there were two. So against Utah, he caught 1 catch for 7 yards. Colorado, 2 for 51 and a touchdown, one of which was 46 yards. Oregon State, 3 catches for 44 yards, and Stanford, 1 catch for 7 yards. Like, even if he was injured at some point of the season, which I'm not sure, he certainly might have been. In those games that he played in, how is he not like a major fixture of the offense? Because, yeah, to your point, like, it's not as if, you know, he's a freshman. It's unfathomable that like he is twice the player he was 6 months ago.
Right.
I just don't understand. I think that a lot of fans, and sometimes myself included, during the Trigg Dart drama of will they or won't they make it to Ole Miss, kind of saw Trigg as like, it's cool. Like he's a tight end. That's great that, you know, we'll be getting him and he's highly thought of or whatever. But like, really the prize is Jackson Dart. But like, maybe the prize is Michael Trigg.
Yeah, I definitely try to temper my expectations for Trigg, but maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. He looks fantastic. My thought was that he was going to struggle to keep Casey Kelly off the field if Kelly was healthy, but that's not going to be the case. I think I could see them running a lot of 2 tight end sets because Kelly is a crushing blocker, and he is a pretty reliable receiver, and the receiver room needs help, like I said. But
yeah,
it's going to be, if I'm Lane Kiffin, I'm trying to make Michael Trigg the leading receiver on the team.
Yeah, at least in terms of quantity of receptions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move to the O-line. I don't have like a lot of key takeaways for the O-line, just that the first unit was awesome. They allowed 0 sacks in the game. I mean, they still allowed for some pressure. I think there were times that Altmaier kind of made things happen without being sacked, but they did a really good job of keeping defenders off of him and in the running plays of really pushing the defensive line back. And Ole Miss's defensive line, I think, is maybe its deepest unit on the team on the defense. I mentioned the secondary earlier. I think they're pretty good too. The linebacker unit is really shallow, but you know, it wasn't as if it was the first team offensive line versus a bunch of scrubs on defense.
Yeah.
But then conversely, the second team offensive line, and this is not necessarily everyone on the offensive line, but as a unit, they just were porous and allowed defensive linemen through nonstop.
Yeah, they allowed a lot of pressure up the middle. Like, it seemed like Dart was having pressure right in his face, as opposed to around the side you can work with. But when it's right up the middle all the time, that's really difficult.
And maybe that's because the next unit we're going to talk about is the defensive line, and J.J. Pegues was on Team Red. So the blue offensive line could not handle J.J. Pegues at all. It was whenever J.J. Pegues was in, he just repeatedly moved everybody to the side and ran at Jackson Dart over and over and over again. And he got two sacks, but he also had a number of times where he either got pressure or just like forced the entire play to go in a different direction and that sort of stuff. He is potentially a major difference maker on the line.
Yeah, another portal guy who already looks like he could be one of the best players on the team.
Yeah. And I think that really aligns with what we heard from like press conferences all through this spring. We would hear consistently J.J. Pegues, Michael Trigg over and over again were players that that some of the other players would name as like players who have stood out. And that continued into the spring game. I think that, so J.J. Pegues is a junior, but he has 3 years of eligibility because of the COVID rule. It's difficult for me to imagine him not going to the NFL before the 3 years of eligibility are out.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Otherwise, on the defensive lines, like even on rewatch, which I rewatched the Grove Bowl last night. Even on rewatch, I think that it's tough to really draw too many conclusions. There were a few sacks, like Jared Ivey had a sack, and they were able to make some things happen, but like there weren't any other performances that were just like, oh, definitely this one player really balled out.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, in a situation like this one where they know they can't actually sack the quarterback, that has to factor in a little bit as well. You know?
Yeah. Also, I guess Damon Clowney he had three tackles and, you know, made a difference, including a sack, which is cool. I think the reports that I've seen have been that Damon Clowney has gained some weight and kind of put onto his frame, so he was a four-star recruit coming out of high school. He was kind of the crown jewel of Lane Kiffin's first class, which was not a very strong class, but it was that transition class. And Damon Clowney redshirted and then didn't play much last year. And so I think that it's kind of easy to say like, well, that's that for him. But it does seem as if he's kind of coming along. And everyone knew when he was coming out of high school that he was too small for the position at the time. So now he's gained weight and seems to have gotten stronger. And if he is able to contribute to an already stacked defensive line, I think that puts the team in a really interesting spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
A question for you. I know this is not in the show notes, but I'm springing it on you anyway. Do you think that the defensive lines, I guess like the depth there, at some point forces more consideration of four-man fronts?
Absolutely, it does. I mean, there are times where, I don't know, you really don't want to be stuck out there with a three-man front if the other team is successfully running the ball a lot. There are times where the numbers just aren't going to be in your favor. And we do just have a lot of guys. So, I mean, Pegues is, you know, obviously really inserted himself in the rotation. But already we have Katie Hill, we have Isaiah Eaton, Jamon Gordon, Tywan Malone, just kind of in that, you know, defensive tackle position. And, you know, they don't all play the same position. You know, some of them play that, you know, I know Pegues plays that zero technique, but some of the other guys play a little bit more off the ball. So there's a lot of versatility there, and it would be a shame not to use that. And then we have a lot of these hybrid rush guys. Cedric Johnson set up to have a huge year. Brandon Mack has always been a guy that's been talked about when he's not injured. We mentioned Jamon Clowney. Jock Brown has always been a guy who's been talked about, has like has an incredible frame and athleticism. We've taken Jared Ivey and Tavius Robinson, who are both kind of more traditional 4-3 strong side ends. Like, we have all these guys. Like, it's really a shame to use three at a time. So I think absolutely.
Yeah, I think that, like, it's tough to argue with the results that the 3-2-6, gosh, I have to, like, add up to 11. The 3-2-6 last year kind of produced. We saw a good defense, a very good defense at times. But, like, and I'm not at all against that. I think that a base 3-2-6 makes perfect sense, no problem, especially with like the modern spread and all that sort of stuff. But I do wonder, like, when we see a player like JJ Pegues wreck a guard over and over again, imagine if double teaming him, or possibly triple teaming him, I guess, like whatever, was really detrimental to the offense. Whereas when you have five guys to block three guys, and I know you have blitzers and everything too, but like in theory, right? Five guys to block three guys, even if like JJ Pegues can easily win a one-on-one matchup over and over again, then like, can he win a one-on-two matchup over and over again? Probably not.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think they're building towards having some more versatility with their personnel. They're getting a little bit deeper, and that seems to be the position group that's maybe benefited the most. So,
yeah. Another transition, a less deep position group, linebackers. it's tough to evaluate how the linebackers did in the Grove Bowl because, especially since there was very little running by the running backs. And they couldn't really hit the quarterbacks. You know, then it became a coverage game. And linebackers can cover and everything. But, like, when the throw isn't there, you know, I don't know what their assignment was. So the only things that I could say is Troy Brown and Kari Coleman had sacks. Kari Coleman definitely looks to be a pass-rushing linebacker. And I think that there's a real asset there. I mean, in many ways, that's what Chance Campbell was. I'm not saying that they're the same player or anything like that, but they might serve a similar purpose in the defense, where Kari Coleman might be tasked with spying the QB and going after him after, you know, a certain count, which is encouraging. That's a nice thing to have. Reginald Hughes, the JUCO linebacker, had five tackles for Team Blue. And was tied for the lead among all defensive players there. But I say that, like, the announcers never said the names of defensive players involved in plays, unless they were, like, picks. And so, honestly, I don't know. I didn't, like, have my eyes on Reginald Hughes for the entire rewatch yesterday or anything, but it's cool that he got tackles, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the view that we have, just the straight sideline view, makes it really hard to watch what's going on at that second level in the defense. So yeah, it's just hard to tell. I didn't gain any insight at all, really. But it is cool that Kari Coleman is out there actually playing linebacker. My concern was that, you know, he had sort of played that rush end. and that he was going to get tossed into a pretty deep room and maybe not make as much of a difference, but he's certainly going to be at a spot where he's sorely needed. You know?
Yeah, I think that this is just me pulling this out of nowhere. So like maybe don't listen to this part, but I would imagine that at least at first, the number of times that he is asked to do like coverage of anyone other than a blocking tight end, other than zone defenses, I guess, would be minimal, and that he does fill that like spy pass rush role, and not as much like being asked to stop to break up a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about the secondary. So start with a newcomer like we have for almost every single one of these. Davison Igbinosin had a pick on a two-point conversion of a Luke Altmyer pass. It was like the first touchdown that either team scored. And he... it was a hitch route by the receiver. Gosh, I wish I knew who the receiver was. Did you happen to remember who that was?
I'm pretty sure it was Dennis Jackson.
Okay. So it was a hitch route. And as the receiver comes back, the throw is a little bit late. And Davison Igbinosin runs all the way around Dennis Jackson to make the pick because he's in good position and the throw is a little bit late. And yeah, it was just like, oh, he's a physical receiver, physical corner who's 6'2 and, you know, was a top 55 player in the country or whatever. I think that he's going to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hard, you know, prototype to find, like you said, tall physical corner who can run and, you know, doesn't get juked out of his shoes all the time, but it seems like he may be that guy. Coaches seem to be thrilled with him and have been talking him up, kind of behind the scenes for a long time. That's really
exciting. Also played him a little bit at safety this spring. They don't really have a need at safety. They have a bigger need at corner, but you know, it's nice to know that he's a kind of versatile player they can use in both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should add, he actually had 5 tackles, so he tied Reginald Hughes for the tackle lead for Blue. And I know that oftentimes when like a corner has a lot of tackles, that's bad, because that means that like they were picked on a lot, but that was not the case. I think that he was just involved in a lot of plays that kind of ended up coming his way. Tysheem Johnson's pick, 73-yard pick 6. You want to talk about that?
I mean, it was a really bad throw and decision, but he looked really competent running the ball. I mean, one of those things where he knew where his seam was and took it. So
yeah, I think he's a super good player. But another, you know, on the return, Jackson Dart decides that he wants to try to like lay the wood to Troy Brown. I'm sure he was just frustrated because he threw a pick, but like, come on, dude, it's a spring game. Like, don't get hurt. You're a quarterback. And yeah, you know, it didn't make a difference because Troy Brown was his lead blocker. And yeah, once he was like taken out of the play, then Tysheem Johnson just had end zone ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like in general, the secondary's performance can be reflected in the quarterback's performance. There were not a lot of options down the field when Jackson Dart or Luke Altmyer tried to force it down the field. It didn't work out.
Yeah, there were several situations where they threw a deep ball and there's a defensive back running step for step with the receiver, and we don't have the kind of receivers to make plays on those balls right now. And that makes it tough to tell what's going to happen against receivers who do have those kind of skills, but they were doing everything they needed to do in those situations. So,
yeah. Okay. So only other secondary player I wanted to talk about, was Derek Bermudez, who with some injuries at the safety position, he had been asked to play a larger role. And I had seen his name in some practice reports recently, but kind of didn't really know kind of how involved he actually was. He had a pick today, or excuse me, today in the Grove Bowl, and it wasn't like an especially good pick. It was actually just like an overthrow from Jackson Dart that he was kind of in position to make the pick on. But I think that just the fact that he's playing as much as he is and has been apparently is interesting, because that room is deep, but it has potential to get a little less deep in the next year or 2 years. And Derek Bermudez was in Kiffin's transition class, the same one as Damon Clowney. He had a lot of offers, or at least he reported a lot of offers. I don't know what was committable and what wasn't, but like LSU, UGA, Florida, Oklahoma all offered him. But he was not like a super highly ranked player. He was, depending on the service, he was a 40-ish safety, number 40-ish safety. And I think that like it was good that we signed him, but, you know, kind of an afterthought. It's interesting to see him potentially come along as a replacement for a team that has typically just relied on lots of transfers so far and hasn't really gotten a lot out of its high school recruits.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, there are a lot of guys there. It's kind of a muddy situation past the starters or the guys that we know are going to play a lot. So it's cool to see a guy take a bigger role, play relatively well. And yeah, hopefully Bermudez will get some snaps this year. We'll be able to see more what he's about.
Yeah. Okay, so getting past the spring game, those are our takeaways on the spring game. We have either two or three scholarships remaining to get to the 32 that NCAA caps of new players. And I should add, for anyone who's listening and may not understand this, if Ole Miss were to have five players decide they want to transfer tomorrow, they would still only have two or three scholarships available for new players. It's not like the total cap is 85 scholarship players on the team, but there's also a cap that there can only be 32 new scholarship players on the team, regardless of what else has happened. And they're hitting up against that cap. And I say two or three because like there are some commitments right now, but like those players haven't signed yet, and we don't really know for sure if that'll stick. So where do you think they need to go?
I mean, Kiffin has mentioned that we need help at receiver, and that is super obvious to me. Even with a couple of guys hurt, the guys who were hurt are not all conference players or anything like that. I mean, they could be starters, yeah. But man, it really seems like there is room for a receiver to come and really make a name for himself in the Ole Miss offense, because we just don't have star power there now. We have a lot of guys who may be serviceable, but yeah, like a star SEC receiver would be pretty welcome.
Yeah, I think we have a bunch of guys who would be pretty strong second options. And having a bunch of guys who are strong second options puts you in a pretty good spot. But like, when it comes down to it, having a guy who, you know, Laquan Treadwell, who is just like, okay, well, we're going to throw it to him, would be very helpful. And of course, like, that's asking a lot. And, you know, even like going to the portal for a guy like that, I mean, everybody wants that person. And maybe that was Isaiah Nair, who went to Tennessee, or someone else, but they haven't been able to get that. And I know that they're rumored to be getting Deion Smith from LSU, who's transferred. He's been in the transfer portal for a while, but hasn't committed anywhere. But Deion Smith is another one of those, like, he has lots of potential. It didn't work at LSU yet. So, like, all the transfers they've gotten so far have had, like, pretty good, promising, interesting stuff. But no one has just been like, oh, this dude is dominant.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, past that, you know, we're unsure about linebacker. That does seem like another position of need. But, I mean, if one doesn't pop up, I think you have the luxury of just going best available. Because, I mean, the Ole Miss football team is really good in a lot of spots, it seems like. Whether that translates to another really successful season, we don't know, but it's a team that's getting deeper and,
yeah,
and getting more talented overall.
Yeah, I think so. I'm aligned. One of the spots has to go to a receiver. I think the other spot, and if there are three, I would even consider using the other two spots on linebackers, because we don't have certainty there. And if you can find two guys that are willing to transfer in and add more to that room, you're more likely to find the players you need to be able to make it work. But I think that the risk you run is that if you're adding two guys, what are the chances that both of those are going to work out? And then you've got a guy who's transferred in and he can't transfer out, right? Like if you say, hey, we'll take a flyer on this guy, he transfers in, he's a sophomore, right? Well, he's at Ole Miss for another 2 years, because if he transfers out, he has to sit. So maybe what it is you use that last scholarship on like best available 1 year defensive player, like a guy who's a COVID senior who's going to come in and like, if it works, that's great. If it doesn't, you've only committed for a year anyway. No big deal.
Yeah. There's a Jake Springer out there. We should get him.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think the last topic we have here is some recruiting. Let's not go too far in recruiting, but they just got a commitment from Marcel Reed, quarterback from MBA, which is Montgomery Bell Academy in Nashville. Shout out to Engel Martin, who also went to Montgomery Bell Academy. He is listed as the number 18 quarterback, the number 21 quarterback, according to the 24/7 composite. He had offers from lots of good schools, Alabama, Arkansas, Baylor, Georgia, Florida, Miami. I don't know what was committable and what wasn't, but at least a number of good schools had kind of expressed some interest in him. And it's a good get. He's 6'1", listed at 175. It's nice to lock down a quarterback. Depending on the service, he was either like a very highly rated 3-star or a 4-star. What are your thoughts on Marcel Reed in general before we talk about kind of implications of that?
This is one I usually go and watch highlights and do a lot of research when we get a new commit. I have not been in position to do that yet.
Okay. I guess Lisbon. Yeah. Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. Well, I would say that, you know, his high school offense is like, I can't remember if it's a wing T or just like a old school pro style type of offense. And so he also runs a lot. But it's the question is like, how does he project to a more like modern era college offense? And that will take, you know, some building, but a number of schools had seen a good promise in him. I think that he's a really good get, and this year we should be happy, but plenty of other years we'd be ecstatic to get a guy like this. The twinge of pain that comes with us taking his commitment is that Arch Manning is uncommitted and Jaden Rashada is uncommitted. So Arch Manning, I think it's clear, like, I don't even know if he's considering Ole Miss at this point. He hasn't visited in quite a long time. I know that he came to Oxford a billion times growing up, but like when he's deciding where he's going to go play football, he came, I think, almost a year ago, and that's it. So
yeah, that's
I'm proceeding as if that ship has totally sailed. But Jaden Rashada was on campus the same weekend as Marcel Reed, which is this past weekend. And coming out of that, Marcel Reed committed, the coaches accepted the commitment. So you could assume that means that they're not getting Jaden Rashada, that's it. But I think that it seems as if they're going to continue recruiting Jaden Rashada. And if Marcel Reed is cool with that, great. And maybe they both end up signing with Ole Miss. That seems really unlikely, but maybe they do. But for now, it seems as if they've got Marcel Reed locked down. They're going to keep going after Rashada. Both quarterbacks were aware of that. So, you know, it's not as if like they're pulling the wool over anybody's eyes.
Yeah. And Rashada, I mean, he's behaving like a guy who's still really strongly considering Ole Miss. I mean, he could commit to Oregon or whatever before we, you know, publish this podcast, but it seems like traveling this far to do a visit in Mississippi is a pretty strong indicator of interest. He's posted a ton of stuff to social media. I don't know. There seems to be a pretty strong feeling there. I can't remember who it was. One of the national recruiting experts projected him to commit to Ole Miss a few weeks ago. Obviously, that was before the Reed commitment, so that obviously could have changed. But there's definitely some reason to, you know, hold out hope for his commitment.
Yeah, and you know, Jaden Rosada, actually, I should add, is depending on the site again that you visit, he's either a 4 or 5-star quarterback. He has offers from tons of schools, but it seems as if it's down to Ole Miss, Oregon, and Miami. He's from California. And have you gotten a chance to watch his film?
I have watched a little bit. He's good.
Yeah, he's really good. So yeah, that'd be cool. The last player I want to specifically talk about is Dante Dowdell. I think it's Dowdell and not Dowdle. Who's a running back from Picayune, Mississippi. And was on campus this past weekend. He'll be committing to the school of his choice mid-May. He's listed as the number 20 running back in the country. He's a 4-star. And yeah, it's down to, I mean, he has tons of offers, but Ole Miss is seemingly sticking out a good bit. I think that he's still taking a few more visits, but it would be awesome to add this guy. He's huge. He's 6'1", 210, and that's in high school before he gets into, you know, a college weight room.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a guy that I think Ole Miss was maybe a little slow to offer, given that he's a Mississippi guy, but and sometimes that creates some friction, but it seems like probably it didn't in this case, and it seems like the general consensus is that Ole Miss is the most likely school to land him, and yeah, it's just great to lock down good Mississippi players. You know, of course it doesn't matter where your players come from at the end of the day, but it is nice to play a little recruiting defense.
Also, in theory, it's just easier to get Mississippi players. So, like, if you don't have the location to fight against you, then, like, you're kind of a step ahead in that way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for Podcast Rebellion. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll get together another time when we have enough things to talk about. Peace out.